after they took him to a private house in another jurisdiction. I mean, you wouldn't believe it if you saw it in a movie, but I'm imagining it'll be that one day. But you know, in Mississippi, I gotta say this. We have a Department of Justice Civil Rights Division that is headed by a black woman, and Kristen Clark takes her job seriously, and her Southern Division attorneys have pursued and made history in this area. And Judge Thomas Lee, they thought that Judge Thomas Lee down here in Mississippi would not do justice, and oh, how he has set a standard and put police officers on notice all over America that if you do the crime, you're going to do the time, just like anybody else.
Well, I just want to say, Eddie Terrell Parker, you and Michael Corey Jenkins, amazingly brave in coming forward and describing what happened to you, which seems to have broken open all of these investigations right now. I want to thank civil rights attorney Malik Shabazz and Trent Walker with Black Lawyers for Justice, and Eddie Parker, who was tortured by the Goon Squad. Thank you so much joining us from Jackson, Mississippi. And that does it for our show. Very happy belated birthday to Tammy Warrenoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's Board of Directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all of our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
Saddle up and ride with country music in your head from 6 till 9 every Saturday morning on KBOO Swingin' Country. You can count on Swingin' Country's stable of rotating hosts to fill your early morning with country, alternative country, western, western swing, and even some rockabilly, bluegrass, and Americana tunes. Swingin' Country on KBOO is mighty fine, Saturday morning, 6 to 9.
If your eyes are on me, you're looking at country.
KBOO.
Good morning. You are listening to The Gab on KBOO Portland, KBOO's most listened to radio show at 8 a.m. on Fridays when we are on, and no one could ever take that away from us.
So true.
I am Tammy, and with me is the one and only, the shining, the star, the epic, the saga, Althea Billings.
Hi, Tammy. Thank you so much for, I was going to say for having me, but we were both the hosts, so it's sort of like we have
humbled
each other.
There.
Well, she called me an epic saga, and now I'm all flustered.
You know Homer, and you know Althea. Boom.
Whoa, never seen us in the same room. Simpson or the guy who wrote the Iliad.
Oh, the guy who wrote the Iliad.
How are you doing?
Now I'm thinking about the Iliad, which is getting was getting sun bleached on my porch for.
Was it?
Yeah, it was for a while.
Sometimes a book like that, you gotta let it cook a little. It's not, you take it out the package, it's not ready yet.
It's not, you gotta, what's the word? You gotta let it breathe.
Let it breathe, crack the spine, get some sun on the pages.
Yeah, it was when I had my injury and I was, you know, being immobilized for a little
bit.
Yeah. You know, you get a little bit in your head.
Yeah.
And what's better than starting to read the Iliad?
Laid up.
And then I started
just
reading.
Just getting into Homeric epics or whatever.
I started rereading, like, the Man's Search for Meaning, and I was just like, Tammy, you gotta chill out. And so and that's when I started reading, like, sci-fi and, like.
Oh, good. I was gonna say, gotta sprinkle in some, like, meaningless reality TV to find your equilibrium. Otherwise, it's like, I'm injured and I'm going back to the ancients, you know?
It was hitting me hard. Yeah. But yes, how are you? How was your drive over here this morning?
It was fine. Yeah, people were acting normally on the road. Sometimes I come in here and I'm like, guys, everybody be nice out there. That was not okay. But
yeah, this morning was a little chill. I wonder why that is.
I don't know. You know, maybe the come down from the nice weather. Should we tell the people what type of show we do in here, probably?
Oh, yes, please, go on ahead.
Well, we like to do a two-parter type of program. Oftentimes we'll be doing an interview. Today we are starting with a news roundup, talking about some headlines from the past week. Then around halfway through the show, we'll do a little midway song. Then we'll go into our community question segment where you can call in and chat with us about the topic that we tell you to.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun, good time, like a wholesome, good time.
Yes.
Speaking of a good time.
Okay.
What would you feel like if you owed someone $464 million?
Out on a limb here? Bad, probably. Probably I would feel bad. Probably I would feel...
stressed out.
How would you feel?
I'm stressed out for Trump. I'm seeing these digits, these numbers. I don't have the fingers to count these numbers.
Sure.
No, the appendages. it's stressing me out. He's stretched thin. He's stressed thin. And
at no point did she say that he was stretched out.
I keep wondering, there's no way that he has this much money. Like, you don't, maybe he does have him in gold bars like the Menendez, right?
Yeah.
But if he does it.
He does make a big deal about, he's like, I'm not liquid right now. Which is a funny
he's
thing.
He's not liquid, not an escrow.
I mean, not, but what are you in? Money.
He's in debt.
He's in solid.
Like. He's in solid for sure.
He's stretched solid.
But there is... So they're going to take... Would they take his buildings?
Like the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, is like, yeah. Yeah, I'll repo Trump Tower.
She better like gold leaf.
Yeah.
That thing is... better get some sunglasses in the summertime.
Yeah.
That thing is shining.
Shine it up, you know? Nobody ever talks about what if you repossess a building and it's like decorated ugly. You know,
The curtains. Who said that? What's the first thing you're gonna do is like change curtains?
Yeah,
it's like something in the political in history.
Anyways. Was that about Nikki Haley and Vivek arguing about curtains in the State Department or something?
No, but we gotta link me in that one later.
Well, okay, sorry. They're irrelevant now. Crazy.
I know. Is that nuts?
They're so irrelevant.
Man, they really tried.
Well, not that hard.
We are getting the 2020 deja vu.
Yeah,
same
redo.
Thing.
Redo.
Yes. And for I remember in 2020, we were talking about Trump and Biden, and you know, I mean, that back then people were still talking about Anita Hill and all this, and I was just kind of like, how did we get to this point? And someone called and they said, worrying about how we got to this point is like worrying about the blueberry bushes while your house is on fire. Well, whose house is catching on fire twice, sir? You know, trying to understand how the heck did this happen and how it's happening again.
Right.
Four years we had to churn something up, and this is what we're... Anywho's not what we're going to talk about right now, but it's just kind of like, how the heck is all this still... It's like...
And
in Women's History Month. It's going to be what, like 8 years of this stuff.
She's doing the math.
It's too much. Anywho's.
It's too much, man.
Anyways.
Speaking of Women's Month, may I?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. if you guys didn't hear about this, I'm trying to find where's the good line in it. So there was this foundation that had created this award called the Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg Women in Leadership Award. But they've had to sort of shut things down. And isn't that so sad in Women's History Month? Like, you know, she was like this really important justice. She wrote some really important opinions, you know. But, you know, and so Women's History Month. But as it turns out, this is also like not operated by her family, I should say. Dwight D. Opperman Foundation. Who the heck is that? But anyway, they decided to open up the Women in Leadership Award to men this year. They selected a few different people who were going to get it. Martha Stewart, we know her. Some other notable, you know, female figures in the world. Conservative media titan Rupert Murdoch, billionaire Elon Musk, this other guy who did some tax fraud and Trump excused him for it, pardoned him. And of course, Sylvester Stallone, kind of the big...
Oh, Sylvester!
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that they, I mean, excluding Martha Stewart, because I don't know, every single one of them has been accused of sexual assault at one time or another. So they're not giving the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Award to Elon Musk or Rupert Murdoch.
I like how in this article it says Ginsburg's family blasted the selections last week, saying the decision is, and the quote is, an affront. To the memory of the late justice and her values.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Can I read you the quote?
Please. From,
this is what the chair of the foundation that runs this in their press release said, quote, "This year we selected leaders in different fields. We honored men for the first time. We thought RBG's teachings regarding equality," all caps, "should be practiced. We did not consider politics." So true. Honestly, the glass ceiling is broken because the Women in Leadership Award is going to Rupert Murdoch.
I wish I was there at the table listening to them discussing how they got to the, like, how did you get to this? Was this a nomination situation, or was this like picking names out of a hat? Did they buy into the, I mean, Martha Stewart, listen, who hasn't, it's tax season. We're all getting a little sweaty.
Right, sure.
Was she doing insider trading?
Insider trading. Putting it out there. Maybe she did some tax stuff, too, that they haven't gotten her for yet.
Allegedly. I don't know.
Allegedly.
But, you know, she's definitely, like, she's been through a lot. I can see the stretching of the dough kneading towards that.
Right.
Right? Cooking reference to Martha Stewart. But Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch, I don't. Why? I wish I could understand why. Like, that's so interesting. Please explain why you chose this. I'd love to hear your opinion.
I'd love to have them, like, all of those people come to, like, an award ceremony and talk about what they've done to advance women in the memory of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Elon Musk, like, well, there's some women on Twitter.
Yeah, so maybe.
Maybe.
This cracked me up, because here's the thing. These days we have so many political scandals that are real, you know, like really about, oh gosh, something really bad happened. Sometimes you got to get a stupid one in there. You
sure,
know,
yeah.
This is ridiculous. This feels like something that would happen on a sketch show. like it's extremely Arrested Development. If you think about it.
Where's Tina Fey?
Where's Tina Fey? You know, like a Women in Leadership Award going to, you know... It's very, very Arrested Development.
Speaking of Arrested Development.
Okay, go on.
Well, and now they're just not going to have you know, maybe they need to sit this one out. Really rethink things. Get back to the drawing table. I suggest maybe getting some women at that table.
Yeah.
And figuring this out.
Can I say something? Because I mentioned this story to a friend because I thought it was very funny. And they mentioned, you know, they're probably like courting donations.
Oh.
You know? And people want to throw around nonprofit industrial complex for people, for like a soup kitchen where it's like you're actually helping people versus this foundation that, from what I can tell, has no association actually with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They just like liked that they could talk about her. And they're like, you know who we need to, you know who really deserves an award? Rupert Murdoch.
Wow, that just blew my mind. That is a nonprofit. It's the second word in the article. A nonprofit has canceled. That's...
That's the nonprofit industrial complex. So, you know.
There's levels to it, for
sure.
There's levels. Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah.
You're welcome.
That's really important. Jeez, I can't believe they did that. Speaking of, I can't believe they did that.
Okay. Go on.
For better or worse.
Right.
Congress.
Oh.
They're struggling. The clock is a racing.
They're what?
They're struggling.
Oh.
What did I say?
No, you're right. I almost fell over from shock.
I can't believe it. They're really struggling. They've been struggling for a while.
Where did the hurt begin?
I
don't even know if we can trace it back.
They finally negotiated to unveil the $1.2
trillion billion.
$1.2 trillion spending bill to continue funding the government through September.
Not even a calendar year.
But then will this be enough to keep the government from shutting down this Friday?
They have until midnight tonight, basically.
The clock is ticking.
Only got 4 minutes to save the world.
Is that a tic-tac-toe winner?
So true, as Nancy Pelosi once said.
Democrats and Republicans are both trying to show off what they got from Centerful Hottie Speaker Mike Johnson. Republicans got funding for 2,000 new Border Patrol agents and a 25% bump in funding for tech at the southern border and 8,000 additional detention beds run by ICE. And a provision to cutting off aid from going to UNRWA. And then the Democrats secured a 9% increase in funding for the Child Care Development Block Grant, which is the nation's primary child care program, and $275 million increased to Head Start. You know, that's actually pretty dope. It also includes $120 million increase in cancer research and $200 million for constructing a new FBI headquarters in Maryland. Republicans were not happy about that, but, you know, what are they? And interestingly enough, the bill also includes $19 million requested from the Supreme Court to fund 33 new security-related positions to protect the justices' residences. Interesting.
So when Clarence Thomas is on the road, would they buy that? They're going to buy a second RV full of Secret Service.
Well, I'm going to have to call. You're going to have to calm down. He flies private jet. Okay,
true.
He's got friends
he does.
With
He does a little both.
He's got friends with private jets. Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah. Would you say ride around?
No, he has he's an RV. He like goes
oh,
on
does
trips.
It, no, you're
he
right.
Goes on trips with his,
when he's not in his private.
When
jet.
He's not in the private jet with. You know,
hey man,
Nazi interested billionaires, just interested in Nazi stuff, not a Nazi from what we know,
like from a historical perspective.
Yeah, he's like, sure, he's got statues in his garden or whatever.
Oh, but garden.
What is that? Now that means something. You have values based on the statues in your garden. You know,
but then
I'm being facetious.
Sure,
people.
Sure. Sorry, $19 million dollars to protect themselves. I wonder if that has anything to do with like. The decision that's been really like all over the board with the Supreme Court, or because it's an election year, you know, there's also you'll get to it a little later about you know, the crowd control situation happening in town. So it's just kind of like why is everyone getting a little restless? Any takeaways from that? The clock is a ticking. Tic-tac-toe winner. Make us win. I will have appeal.
I don't have anything to say about it. I'm just,
clock
you know, I can't even get upset about it because I don't expect any different. But, you know, I hope the government doesn't shut down. Fingies crossed. Should we talk Portland?
Sure. Here
Portland.
We are.
Which one do you want to do first?
Whatever comes to mind.
Okay. Well, the one that I wanted us to talk more in depth about is this article from the Portland Mercury that came out yesterday. It's called Portland Preservationists Think the Future of New Housing is in Old Buildings. So a bunch of folks from the Historic Landmarks Commission went to city council and was trying to push back on the idea that the only way to build affordable housing is to, or even deal with the housing shortage, right? Because we need housing of kind of like all affordability levels. It doesn't have to be new construction. We could be retrofitting old buildings.
Incentivizing developers to preserve and renovate with a good old tax credit.
Yeah.
State level tax credit.
Yeah, they want to do a tax credit, which it sounds like most other states are doing. So it feels like we could get on board with that, you know, relatively easily. Quote from the article here. While building preservationists have sometimes been known for demonstrating a strain of anti-housing NIMBYism, the HLC's message was intent on showing that housing construction doesn't have to be at odds with maintaining historic properties and neighborhood character. And so, you know.
Way to go with the non-biased media over there. But there's Mercury sometimes just like, guys, come on. Why do you have to put that in there?
It's context.
It's petty, but it's... I this is a really interesting article because I still don't really understand, because again it goes back to, well, building on what you're saying, there is a way of bringing the Portland clean Clean Energy Funds into,
they want PSEF money for it,
into retrofitting these houses so that they are more, you know, just work better and can just be at the level of where houses need to be now and be efficient. Mm-hmm. In, you know, houses back in the day were not built in an efficient way, and
it's sort of like living in cheesecloth the way that some of these buildings have aged. You know, you're in the elements is what I'm trying to say.
That's, it sticks to you? Is that what it...
No, like I'm saying if you try to heat it, it just goes right out.
And I think the way that they're describing it, at least, is, you know, it makes sense if they want to use this Portland Clean Energy Fund, which, again, is making a lot more money than they projected it to make, which is a 1% tax on retailer stores that are making $1 million.
Billion.
$1 billion.
Big box retailers. I can't do
$1 billion in revenue. Mm-hmm. So the dollars would go to thermal performance upgrading, lighting, modernizing mechanical systems, incorporating renewable energy sources.
Yeah.
And all of this makes sense. I mean, to me, it makes sense in why these are the funds that would be used for that.
Right.
Also, there's been a couple of cases of this working.
Like the retrofits?
Yeah, like the retrofitting the Anna Mann House, which was converted into affordable housing development. So I'm not really... This whole thing just seems very... I like it. I would love to understand more from the point of view of, like, these policy people here.
There is some talk in this article and, like, that the reason that retrofitting either of historical buildings or of, you know, the empty office space downtown, they're saying that the reason that it hasn't happened is because it's not cost effective. And there are certain arguments that the, you know, the preservationists are making about, you know, this is actually really good from a green perspective to not knock these buildings down because of all of, like, the carbon emissions associated with construction. And, maybe that is true, maybe that isn't. But and this is, like, not based in science, what I feel here. But I just find it hard to believe that it would be less expensive to knock down a building than to change one that's already up. And that's part of the case that they're making against this. Does that strike you as wrong? I mean, because I'm like open to being way out of line on it.
I don't understand. At least maybe the quote that they have from this guy from SiteLight is, maybe they could have gotten like someone else to explain it a little bit better, but it just seems like the beef is kind of like, this quote is, I'm a little skeptical of the idea that we should always be preserving buildings for environmental reasons or that old buildings are inherently better somehow. What? I don't know. That was just a bizarre, bizarre quote. I think it's usually easier to build new buildings, but it's not always clear cut. Okay. The historic preservationists would like you to believe it's always clear that old buildings represent so much in biocarbon that no matter how leaky it is, it's always better to keep old things. That's often not the case, and sometimes it is. What?
Like, you know, he's not coming down too hard.
I need someone to really explain this to me a little bit better. For almost all building, the vast majority of their life cycle, energy use is in heat and cooling, not in the construction process.
Yeah,
I get that, but is not the whole point why the Clean Energy Fund will come in to retrofit and to kind of make it the whole. To make it energy efficient. So.
Right. And I mean, even when we're talking, we're not even talking about new development. We still have to like energy retrofit old buildings mm-hmm. in town.
Sure.
You know? So I feel like some of that work is already happening. Maybe part of the thing that I sense about it in terms of like new construction is just like how much, especially when we're in this housing shortage and we like urgently. Need to get it going, yeah. You know? Is there like maybe this is not part of like what is being considered, but like what is the cost to the timeline of we need to knock this building down, we need to clear the site, we need to build a new building from scratch, you know? And I'm not saying but I feel like there's another added cost to that that is in terms of time, that is in terms of, you know, what does the city lose, you know, waiting now 2-3 years for this development of, you know, a range of housing, like, you know, of rent levels or
gotcha, yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and also taking into consideration, like, you know, now we're kind of going into spring and all, so the elements are not as brutal until it gets really hot,
right?
You know?
Right.
But just like the human element of like we need these housings like yesterday, 3 days
yeah.
ago, you know.
Yeah.
Another, you know, point of the, you know, the. I mean, and again, if I would love to have a conversation off air, if, you know, to understand better, like, why, what the beef is. But so far, you know, this is from the Mercury article, Oregon developers interested in preserving and renovating historic buildings can tap into a 20% federal tax credit. But advocates say it's limited in scope and inefficient to cover the prohibitive
yeah.
cost of rehabilitating existing properties.
And that's another part of this. And in reporting that we've seen in sort of like addressing the housing short, like the short supply that we have, is that there are like certain levels or certain types of constructions that developers will refuse to do simply because they don't make enough profit. Mm-hmm. It's not that they don't make profit. It's that they don't make a margin that they want to make. And so I wonder how that plays in as well. It's like, oh, they're not making enough money off mm-hmm. of doing this. So they like refuse to, or they say that it's impossible as a result of that. And I think, yeah, I don't know.
It goes on to say that the advocates point to 38 other states with similar programs. So
I'm not saying that it's a
there
bad
is like
program.
You know, we can see the impact of it. And of course, like every city is different. But, you know, I'm really, again, the case study that or the points that they're the houses and, you know, locations that they're talking about that they've been preserving right now are really dope and are really
yeah.
meaningful to Portland history. And
yeah, there was discussion of some recently landmarked houses in Portland as well at the end of the article. The John D. Marshall Building, the Jim Pepper House, and the Beatrice Morrow and Edward Kennedy House, with some unsung cultural contributions from the people that live there. And those are now landmarked, which is cool. I was going to say one other thing about it. And part of it is like that, I don't know, it's just, and this is also like, my mom is very like historically preservation minded. Mm-hmm. And like, I grew up with like a lot of, you know, appreciation for that kind of a thing. You know, there's just we respect the beauty of older buildings, you know, and part of that is because, you know, back in the day, like brick was the most affordable and like made the most sense economically to build mm-hmm. with. And what we're building with now is like, I don't know, concrete and steel and metal yeah. siding. And like, it's not, you know, having things that have character that like feel like they fit into a neighborhood, I feel like there is value in that as well, especially if you are like interested in dealing with the housing shortage. And part of that is like combating NIMBYism that mm-hmm. tends to run things, you know?
Who's NIMBYing now? Like Williams, you know, you see like, or like, you know, I walk around North Portland, Northeast yeah. Portland. It's like, you see the character and you're like, oh, this is, you can tell this has been here for a while. And then all of a sudden, it's just this like big rectangular,
weird looking like, townhome.
Weird, bizarre.
That doesn't look like Portland, you know? It looks like it could be anywhere.
It looks like it could be anywhere. And there's
even in space.
Even in space, the Borgs. And it's, you know, like the Grand Canyon in Arizona?
I've heard of it, yeah.
It's, so the cool thing about, one of the many cool things about it is that you could see the different eras of the world's development.
Yeah, the layers of geology.
The layers. And that's kind of like the cool things about cities that preserve, you know, their historic buildings is there is a building, let me tell you, you probably, I don't know if people know this, there's a building downtown Portland right by the water, and it is older than Oregon itself.
Really?
And you know what they did?
What?
They painted over it.
What?
They painted over. They say, oh, it's not hip with the times. Not hip with the times? You're not hip with the times. Mm. Anyways, it's still there. You know, it's... Why not have kind of like... being able to see the development of a city, kind of like the Grand Canyon, and you see kind of, you know, it's cool. You can see what was, you know, in fashion certain years, and...
Yeah.
I mean, if Vanport was still, you know...
Right, right.
You know, like... What, I don't know. I still want to understand the other side a little bit better because I want to understand better like the opposition. But you know,
this isn't to say that we're like anti new construction or anything. It's like at least I'll say for myself. I mean, I'm anti stuff being ugly, you know. But that's up to the person building it. But you know, like I'm not anti new construction. Like I think we got to come at the issue from all angles. You
sure.
know.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Why not? But if you ever thought there'd be a day where, you know, Commissioner Maps and Dan Ryan and myself and Althea might be kind of, you know, in a huddle together.
Curiously on the same page.
Yeah, here it is. And that's what makes me, suspicious, you know? Mm. Although broken clock is right twice a day, so that's, who knows?
Right, right.
Shall we move on to
We have a couple mentions.
Mentions.
We want to do mentions of these, right?
Sure.
Okay. Well, one of them, another Portland Mercury article, Portland police will get premium pay for joining new crowd control team. Amid lingering criticisms and lawsuits stemming from the 2020 protests, the city approved a 6% pay bump for new public order team officers. So they're getting the band back together, baby. Sorry, that's... this was a little grim for us.
It's a coping mechanism. Coping. It's yes. The band. Boys are back in town.
The boys are so back in town. It's crazy.
I love it.
The city ordinance says the city and the PPA agree, that's the police union, that it's helpful to provide a premium pay incentive to attract high quality officers to this work, the city's ordinance states. The city is trying to rebuild a crowd control squad with new training recommendations after several lawsuits and complaints of excessive use of force by prior officers. So, a lot of the guys that were on that team, they're not allowed to be on it anymore because of lawsuits about... abusing the public and the public's rights. So now 6% pay to be on the team.
Good luck.
But you were like, why now?
Yes.
That was something Tammy posited.
Why now? But I don't
know.
I don't know.
It's an election year, you had said?
It's yes.
Sorry, not to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, I did say that. And it
You said you loved premium pay. No, I'm kidding.
It's you know, good luck. Good luck to us. May the odds be in our favor.
You know, yeah, just putting it on the radar.
Speaking of radar.
Go ahead, please.
Last one from Willamette. Seven city councilor candidates qualifying for matching taxpayer funds, which is the small donor election program.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, there's the 12-member city council election
in November,
and so far seven of the candidates qualify for $40,000 in matching taxpayer funds from the small donors election, which is a program that matched small campaigns contributions as much as 9-1. They got some you know, interesting information on
they have yeah they have to do a certain amount of fundraising before they can
yes.
get the
it's actually pretty interesting. So the candidate must have broad community support and serious about running, and collect 100 or small contributions from Portland residents in order to be certified to be matchable. And people running for mayor actually have to have 750 small donations from Portland residents. Matchable contributions must be from Portland residents at least 18 years of age who are citizens or permanent residents. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The first $20 you give a candidate can be matched if you are a Portland resident or citizen or permanent resident candidate. You donated gets certified to use this program, and the city can verify the contribution is from you and that you're eligible to be matched.
Yeah.
So that's, so now you know that at least seven of the people who are running for city council did this work.
Yeah.
So they have, in some way, broader community support from their constituency, which I think matters.
That is part of the whole point. Should we name them, or tell
people? Oh, go ahead. You want to drop names?
Well, look, Willamette Week's dropping names.
About that time.
Angelita Morillo, Robin Yee, Jesse Cornett, Chad Lincoln, Steph Ruth, Candace Avalos, and Teemer Ender. I think that's, might have said eight somehow. I don't know. But those are the ones that have qualified for the funds so far. And, interesting.
Yeah, we'll see.
Good for them, I think.
Yeah,
run your campaign.
Obviously, they're working out there, shaking hands and kissing babies.
Yeah. In order to get matching funds, you have to kiss 100 babies.
Oh, their little feet. Anyways, that's the updates from local news. I guess we can go to a quick musical break.
We're going to take a little musical break. You're listening to The Gap. We'll be back in a moment.
She's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner. But she always knows her place. She's got style, she's got grace. She's a winner. She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking about that little lady.
We're back here on The Gap on KVOO Portland. Feeling ourselves. My name is Tammy, and with me is Althea Billings.
Hello. I'm good. She's a lady.
I'm so jazzed
up right now.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa,
whoa, whoa. She's a lady. Women's History Month. I did ask about the inspiration for Tom Jones, no?
I think. Whoa. I gotta chill out.
Okay, it's the second half of the show, which is our community question segment. That is when you, the listeners, can communicate with us by the phone, by the Instagram, by the email, by the website. Let me pull that up to let us know what you think about our community question. Tammy, would you like to introduce it?
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking about personal finances.
Dun, like, dun, dun. Gulp. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Sorry, stupid.
Why are we so scared to talk about finances? I'm assuming we is the
you're the only
the
one
the royal we talking about it. Good question, Althea wrote here. Who benefits from us not talking about it? Because we all have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Whether and you could say, well, the capitalistic system. Well, you got to eat. We gotta survive.
Yeah.
It also,
what are, yeah, what some habits we're talking personal finance habits, good habits, bad habits.
Yes, and also like the relationship, because the relationship with personal finances and what is your personal relationship? What is your relationship with personal finances and, you know, habits that, and whether these habits, you know, help you in other places? Because obviously it's like, I don't know, like personal finances is like, it's a big, you know, I feel like, you know, overwhelmed by it, but it's not like there's other things that I haven't felt overwhelmed by and I still did it, you know, like I still learned it. I still went through it, you know, sometimes in life, you got to get through things, you know?
Yeah.
So personal finances, and Althea also wrote here, do you feel like explaining retirement funds to us?
We're open to it.
What is a 401k and what happened to 401a through G?
Somebody, if you know, let us know. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can email us. Our email address is thegapradio@gmail.com. You can message us on Instagram. Our handle is @thegapradio. You can also message us on the website, kbu.fm, on the bottom right side of the homepage. There is a little chat with us button. You can click on it. Let us know what you think personal finances, plural. I got more than one. You know, good habits, bad habits. What should we be talking about more? Because, you know, like Tammy said, the conversation is kind of stymied, you know?
You were talking
trying
about
to keep it close to the vest.
Yeah, people, you know, and tell the little tricks to the trades. You know, they're set. You were talking about the 30% for rent.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And I was telling you, I just saw an article that said the 30% for rent is outdated. Then what is it?
Right.
And they say, well, you got to figure it out. I hated that article.
we're angry at the article itself.
Everything is clickbait these days. No one is actually explaining anything.
Well, and it's ChatGPT. And they've never, that's not a real person who actually has to pay rent.
ChatGPT is not a real person? What are you talking? I'm kidding.
Watch.
ChatGPT never had to pay rent, yes. And then also, again, the relationship with finances, what it can do to feel more secure. Does it actually give you security? But again, those habits and developing them, because how much of this is just, you know, habits, and, you know, habits are hard to break, but once you do.
Yeah.
503-231-8187.
We would love to know what you have to say. So with the rent thing, right? I didn't know until, like, I reported on it that the federal, like, standard for whether or not your rent is affordable is indexed to 30% of your monthly income. So if you're spending at or around 30% of your monthly income on rent, your rent is considered affordable. I mean, obviously, if it's less than 30%, then great, your rent is really affordable. But so that's, like, the government standard that policies are based off of. But then I was interested because what I had always heard up until that point is that you don't want to spend more than 50% of your monthly income on rent. So like the sort of like social version of the rule is 50%. And, you know, even now that's maybe changing, or like, because 30%, that is so low. Like, I don't know that I know too many people that enjoy that kind of, you know, 30% of their income, you know?
I mean, yeah, and then, you know, you're going to the government index. They're also the ones that, you know, the federal minimum wage and the state, but like these minimum wages are not, they don't, they, when they said minimum wage, they were emphasizing the minimum. And you can't, like, I'm looking right here at South Carolina, it's like $7.25, Pennsylvania,
right, the federal is still so low.
Oregon, $14, effective through June 30th, but it's like, you can't, $14.20, what, that's 20% of that, where, you know, it's you're very limited in what you can do. But also comes to mind is that, you know, the notion of when they were talking about the 30% was like half the, you know, specific population in like crippling student debts. Like,
right, there are so many things that like complicate the picture now, more so than in years past, you know. Like, I mean, part of the reason why you and I are, I mean, I guess I'll say for myself, I'm confused by retirement funds. I'm not totally sure, like, I know whatever I'm doing, I'm not doing it right. I understand that I haven't done enough and that something else needs to be done, but, you know, back in the day, you used to work a job, you get a pension, you're set. You know, Social Security, those dollars used to mean something. You know, there was, you know, everybody was owning a house, and, you know,
$35
Women couldn't own credit cards, so we weren't in near the amount of debt that we are now.
I kind of wonder, maybe, don't bring that
up. I'm kidding. It's Women's History Month.
Yeah, Women's History Month. Women's History
Month. Not in Women's History Month.
Oh, man, we've got to talk about that next month. we got a caller on the line. Joel, you're on the air.
Hey, I love the topic, and I can keep it short. I think to that one question, I think personal finance is for kind of decades been, you know, some literally that the it, in my work it said don't talk to, don't discuss that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they don't want people comparing, and compensation, you know, in our system is not based on, in my opinion, the risk, how hard it. I mean, just for example, like motherhood, parenting is not considered compensation worthy, but it's such work, you know. And this is not original thought, but certainly some, you know. And I'm a socialist. I think just another related. I think it's very much at the heart of so much. Compensation discrepancy. It's such at the heart of problems. I even think like mental health would flow from, you know, writing this. I think it's such a systemic root thing that I think it's I think there's people actively that want to frame it differently. Right wing often frame it differently. So that's not, you know, blame every. I'm kind of going all over here, but I think so. Personal compensation, I think, would point out these discrepancies. Maybe somebody there's this old trope that, like, you know, rich people work much harder than you, longer days. I just don't buy that at all. I'm a working person. I work with my body, physical work. I have been on a computer before at a job, and there's different, I just think there are quantifiable differences, risks. I'm kind of going all over, but I'll leave it at that. And I really love the topic.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for calling.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it for sure.
Okay, I'll keep listening. Okay.
Thank you. Sure. You have a good one.
Mm.
Yeah,
all of that
compensation. It is at it's at the heart of it all. Yeah, sorry, that gave me a lot to think about to chew on there.
It got me to thinking about you know, mental health and personal finances. You know, when you go through something, and you know, something, life happens, mm-hmm. and God forbid you get sick, money. God forbid you get evicted, money.
Right,
car breaks down, money. I mean, divorce, money, kids, money, you know,
being alive, it's expensive,
and
man.
All of these, you know, events, you know, they can really, you know, shake you up. And if you, man, this, you know, really gets you to understand that, you know, at least in things I've gone through, it's like personal fine. It's like what my mom said. My mom has a quote. She says, save a dollar now because it'll save you later.
Mm, yeah, mm, yeah. Mm, mm. But I think also, you know, like Joel was mentioning, how much of this is now like laid at the feet of the individual, you know, and the work that we have to do that doesn't get compensated.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, you know, and like we were saying, that it's gotten increasingly complicated to sort of be at that baseline level of, okay, if I did get sick, could I, how long could I handle,
right,
that kind of thing? Or if I did get evicted, what would I do? Or, you know, like that, or if I lost my job, like how long could I hang on for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like that there, you know, that's a more complicated picture now than it used to be. I do have another comment from Instagram.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, talking about, why don't we talk about personal finance? This is from Mike. It says, why don't we talk about personal finance? Escrow. You got us there, Mike. That's so true.
And you know, it's my personal finance. I hope that one day my personal finances will explain to me what escrow means. But until that day,
it's a mystery. We're going off vibes.
It's an enigma.
As we often have.
But it, again, like, go to the mental health thing.
Yeah.
You go through something,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, you're a human. You're going to react to it however humans react to it, wherever your emotional maturity, your emotional intelligence, whatever it is, wherever it takes you to,
uh-huh.
it could make you or break you. Mm. And you have people who have one bad episode, you know, like a manic episode or something, boom, blowing $300 at Macy's on perfumes or something, you know? Why is that so specific? I'm not going to go there. But it's, and then to have to come back from that. And
right.
then we're talking about credit cards. And then we're, and that's not, you know, and then the worst thing that has happened to millennials is DoorDash. I said,
I was watching a video about this morning. Folks, if you want to call, please, 503-231-8187 is the phone number, 503-231-8187. We're talking about personal finances, good habits, bad habits. Do you have advice? You know, we'll hear it.
Not certified.
We don't have our accreditation yet, but if
or
you,
credit.
Or credit. We don't have credit, but we would love to credit you with telling us a habit. So, you know, let us know, 503-231-8187. But yeah, the DoorDash. There was a whole kerfuffle on Twitter this week about DoorDash.
Oh, okay, do tell.
Really? Yeah. Where people were like, hey, DoorDash, like, that somebody was just sort of, it's, I think it started out of somebody saying, it is wild that I see my neighbors, like, DoorDashing coffee and a bagel in the morning. Because those are things that you can pretty easily get yourself. You know, it's not like a cuisine that you don't know how to make, for example. And that, you know, the way that DoorDash and all of these sort of, like, gig, whatever, delivery apps are, they are really expensive compared to the cost of the meal. But there's a lot of people now who are, you know, we're in Twitter, like, defending that actually it's cheaper to get DoorDash than to get groceries. They're like, if I drove my Ford F-150 to the store every day for dinner, that would be more expensive. It's like, yeah, well, you don't go to the store every day for grocery, like, buy for a week.
This is in Europe.
First of all.
I know, right? You're like, bicycling one with a baguette.
Right. And so, I mean, a lot of, like, misconceptions about DoorDash. And they're like, well, I can't handle the mental load of, like, making a frozen meal.
But that's, again, that thing of, like, this mental health, you know, like, this, you know, like, why is it, it's, why, people have been working for a long time. And people were able to make meals for themselves for a long time. And maybe this is a very, like, generational specific thing, but the DoorDash, it is the bane of a lot of millennials' existence. And yeah, like you said, who am I to sit here and say, no, you know what, you're actually totally stable and can totally go microwave a dinner. You know, I don't know a person's situation. I've personally been in a night where I'm just like, I'm too tired to cook, I'm going to DoorDash something.
Yeah.
Immediately regretted it. It's never as good as you. It doesn't hit the spot or anything. And then I think to myself, I could have literally walked down the street and saved myself like $20 or something.
Yeah.
But there is, again, it's like mental health, or I don't know if it's mental, but this burden of...
Right.
Of treating, it's not the habits. Again,
yeah.
It is, choosing DoorDash, in my opinion, is a personal financial habit.
Yeah.
And where is it taking you to? I don't know.
Can I tell you what mine is? Because I never really got into the delivery apps. It's that if I'm going to, like, you know, eat takeout or whatever, get in the car and go get it, you know, or like go walk to go get it. I mean, you can walk to, you have really good stuff by you, but I don't necessarily, but it's sort of like, that's the enforcement mechanism of, like, it's not total ease, and, like, you know, and also because it's like you're paying on an app and it's like that money is never even real to you. You know, it's like, why am I, this is just for a burrito and it's so expensive, and by the time it gets here it's going to be cold, when it's like I could go, you know, I cannot, you take out still exists. Very true. I have some more comments
from
listeners.
Yes.
This is from the website. Cedric says, yeah, employers and electeds don't want you to talk about it because they don't want you to realize how badly you're getting screwed. 30% for rent? No way. Median individual income in Oregon is $32,171 in 2020. $32,000. And median rent in Portland is way above $1,200. We used to be able to provide for a family of four on a single income. We are getting so utterly screwed. It's unreal. Very true. I also...
That's more believable that they were ever able to do that.
But yeah.
Wow.
Supporting one person is hard. And then Mike from Instagram says, in all serious, financial literacy is so subpar for young people. And then you make it so easy to give them $120,000 in student loans without realizing that the loan is now part of their monthly budget process for decades. But if I did have one piece of advice for someone entering the workforce, claw and scratch to save $10,000 into a money market account. It may take a few years. It's an emergency fund that gives you choices when something bad happens. That's actionable. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Cedric.
You hear that?
Tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, there it is.
Gears turning. We're on it. We're on it. We have a few more minutes if you want to talk personal finances. 503-231-8187.
This is great. This is a great conversation.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm getting it off my chest. I feel like we're letting everyone in on the because it's
the stress.
It's why don't we talk about it?
Why don't
Boom,
we?
There it is.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't done the math on it, although I've been budgeting.
Yeah.
And if I can recommend, I'm not recommending anything, something I did that I found helpful, budgeting, and then go into any app and then put how much you spend on food, groceries, essentials in a pie chart.
Oh, a pie chart.
Because then you see it, or a graph, or some way to shock yourself into seeing how much money you spend on frivolous things.
Right.
And it's not frivolous. I shouldn't say frivolous. On habits that don't serve you. You know? Because it's not frivolous to eat. That's not what I'm saying.
It is very necessary, some have said.
I would say it is up there.
It's one of the things that we have to keep doing, unfortunately.
But it's, you know,
tell that to the Soylent people.
Definitely.
Go on.
Definitely. Do these habits serve you?
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation to have, you know, even with your friends, like, and why don't we, do you talk with your friends about finances?
It has come up maybe once or twice, but not typically. And it is something that I've noticed as well with, like, because some of my friends are in more, like, stable romantic relationships and, like, are moving in together or are, like, oh, so one of my partners going back to school, but we have all these habits from, like, when we were both, you know, earning income and supporting ourselves that, like, now that doesn't super work, but how do we talk about it? And I don't feel comfortable spending money on these things. And, like, I don't know. It's just, it's a thorny kind of prickly thing that I've noticed, you know, people in my life are like having to deal with. And sometimes I'm like, how are you affording this with respect and peace and love? I'm just like, how much are you paying in rent? Cause it seems like maybe it's a lot, but I'm not trying to tell anybody how to live. Cause I don't know how to live. Yeah. You know?
Well, then that's a curiosity, but I think because we don't talk about it, even just asking in good faith could come off or can make you even feel uncomfortable asking, you know?
Or like condescending or something.
The idea of like being in a partnership and moving in with someone and talking about finances prickly, I mean, you get in prickly, but you're not going to talk about finances? That's prickly. That's sketch.
Yeah. But
again, it's true. That's real.
It is real. It's one of those things. 503-231-8187. We got a couple minutes left if you want to talk personal finances with us. We would love to hear what you have to say. And, you know, there's something actionable that we could be doing. I do have, I looked up, you know, some cursory Googling. Automating your savings is one of the ones that they really recommend. So, like, you know, if you have a bank app. Although, you know, we need to wake up the fact that not everybody is using the internet or their phone for banking, and it feels like everything's gone all online, and I just feel like that leaves some people behind in that. But that you could, for example, every time your paycheck comes in, automatically save a certain amount or put it in a different account. It allows you to, like, make those changes pretty easily.
How about this? You ready for this? Are you ready for this connecting? How about if you be your own candidate for matching taxpayer funds? And for every $20 that you make, match yourself. $20 and say, it's a slow clap.
Sorry, I wasn't participating.
Is it Gordon Ramsay? Who's the finance guy? I don't know.
The yelly one?
Yeah, the yelly.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I don't
Watch out, I'm coming for your seat. this has been a great conversation.
Yeah.
I think we probably have to wrap up. Any mentions for weekends?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I did want to mention the Policing Justice exhibit that is on at PICA through the middle of May. It seems very impactful and cool, so... You know, do
some KABU friends are presenting on
KABU so friends are cool. presenting. We've been covering it a bunch, and yeah, a lot of cool and interesting things happening there. So maybe people want to check it out. I don't know. Also, you know, like consumerism is not like a personality, is just a thought that I'm having.
That, where did that come from?
I don't know. Let me cook on it. Maybe I'll come back next week with something for you.
That was off the cuff. That was Althea's message to
Do you have a closing statement, a closing message?
I'm just thinking about Speaker Johnson. Yeah. I hope he's doing well. I hope
we're
going to
go
shut down.
We're going to go get like a pastry, huh, after this?
Get a coffee, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, a little treat for doing a good show.
Talk about
financially responsible, that would maybe... I think that we are just about out of time,
just
wouldn't you say?
I think
we
got a minute, a second. Do you think
we could take the comment off the air?
We'll talk
to you in the air room or something like that. But we really appreciate everybody who called to chat with us about personal finances. You know, wishing a windfall for you and yours in these times.
Have an awesome weekend. Happy Purim to all celebrating, and enjoy yourselves and this great weather that we're going to have.
Yeah. Follow us on Instagram at The Gap Radio.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Are you eloquent in elephant? Can you converse in chimpanzee? Have a heart-to-heart in horse or chat with a cow? Me neither, but we can definitely speak for them.